As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today we react to a fantastic FA Cup third round weekend with giant killings for Hartlepool, Boreham Wood, Cambridge, Plymouth Argyle and of course Kidderminster Harriers. We'll talk about the performances of Arsenal, who went out at the hands of Nottingham Forest, and Spurs, who managed to scrape past Morecambe. And we'll also talk about whether postponements in the Premier League should be allowed to have new signings involved when the game eventually takes place. That argument rumbles on. Stay with us on the Game Podcast for all that and more. Hello and welcome back to the Game Football Podcast with myself, Hugh Woozencroft, after what has been a stellar FA Cup third round weekend, one to live long in the memory. Joining me, Tom Clark and Alison Rudd, to discuss it all. I hope everyone is well. Listen, let's just talk about, firstly, before we get to Arsenal and Spurs and some bigger clubs a little bit later on, it was a weekend for giant killing. Kidderminster Harriers, the lowest ranked side, left. They produced another memorable upset. They knocked out Championship side Reading, 79 places above them in the pyramid, 2-1. Amari Morgan-Smith is now a club legend. Boreham Wood reaching the FA Cup fourth round for the first time in their history of the National League, of course, beating League One side AFC Wimbledon. League One Cambridge United, you've been waiting, haven't you, Cambridge fans, for me to mention you. That was the good old-fashioned giant killing, if you like, going to St. James's Park and beating Newcastle United. Joe Ironside, what a name, with the winner in that one. Ryan Law scored an excellent goal. League One Plymouth knocking out the Championship side Birmingham City in extra time. And League Two Hartlepool United coming from a goal down, stunning the Championship side Blackpool and reaching the fourth round for the first time since 2009. This is what the FA Cup is all about. This is what all those montages are about at the start of the season when it comes to the FA Cup and all those articles written about whether this tournament still has the same draw. This proved them all right. The answer is yes.
Goodness me, Hugh. What did you have for breakfast this morning? Whatever it is, I want some.
Chocolate,
that is.
In fact, it was a chocolate hobnob. I offered you one before and you said no. So you don't want one.
That's true. I missed out there. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You've proved me wrong because I said it was the most boring FA Cup draw in living memory on Thursday's show. And quite frankly, I'm embarrassed. No, there were some fantastic, fantastic results, wasn't there? One quick question I've got for all of you. I did feel slightly sorry for Cambridge when I thought about it. Because, you know, you've got this big win, but then you've realised you've beaten this Newcastle side. And whose shirt do you take from that Newcastle team? Genuinely.
Kieran Trippier.
Yeah, you all fight over Kieran Trippier. And then after that, maybe Saint-Maximin. And then after that, you're like, actually, mate, I'll keep my own. Genuinely, look at that team. You're thinking, big day out, you've beaten Newcastle at St. James's Park. Great, I get the shirt of a Premier... Oh, yeah, no.
But you get the shirt, come on. It's a memory of the greatest day probably in your football career. It doesn't matter whose shirt you take.
Nah, honestly, I guarantee down that tunnel, there's a load of like leftover Newcastle players' shirts because they all walk down taking them off going, yeah, mate, do you want that? Nah, I'm not sure. All right, don't worry about it.
But it was a great unifying experience.
It was.
The whole nation were behind Cambridge.
They were. And I mean, I'm slightly embarrassed because we didn't back them for a shock, did we, on Thursday? We thought Newcastle would put out a strong side, which they did. Kieran Trippier.
Not only that. I mean that. Everything about it was startling, that Trippier did actually make his debut in a game.
Great
that,
fun.
I mean,
see, and at right back as well, when they played a wing back system as well. So you've got Kieran Trippier in there to put crosses in the box, but you play him as a right back behind a right wing back in Ryan Fraser. Utterly, brilliantly bizarre. I genuinely think they put him in there for the shirt swap. That was weird.
That was weird. A lot of people were saying to me, oh, he didn't play in that game, did he? I mean, it was like, really? Would you do that to him? And also, did you see the atmosphere at St James's Park. There were more flags than I've ever seen at any football stadium in my whole life. It felt like you were, it was the Champions League final or something. Why were they? None of the behaviour around that match made any sense whatsoever. And then you get the owner going in at, to see the players, because he was always going to do that apparently. And you just think, oh my goodness, when are they going to turn up and actually see something that they think they've bought? Remarkable. And a sellout crowd. And it's like, I don't know, it's like the takeover has sent them all slightly doolally. I don't get it. This does not happen when you have a Premier League crowd turn up with that much passion, flag waving, and a new signing, which is a shock in itself, really, that they got someone of Kieran Trippier's class, because he is highly thought of in Spain. We've slightly all forgotten about him, haven't we? But it's a coup to get him, and it might mean that other leading players come to the club, and the fans are all, every single fan is sort of twirling something in the air and making a huge noise, almost as if they are the underdogs, and the whole thing implodes, so that you end up thinking that football isn't football anymore. And I feel slightly sorry for Cambridge as well, Tom, because I don't think it's a proper giant killing. It felt like, that seemed quite logical, because Newcastle are almost becoming a parody of Let's Watch Takeover. They are a fly on the wall documentary, but we're all watching it live. That's what's happening. You don't need to edit it for it to be funny anymore.
It is a little bit. It's a bit Netflix, isn't it?
It's very Netflix.
It's very. They're kicking themselves, aren't they? That they didn't buy into this project as well as all the other ones they've done in football, because this would have been hilarious. I mean, I sympathise with Newcastle fans as well, because Alisson's right. They're so desperate for a good time. And they've got everything else to cheer. They've got loads and loads of money. They've got Kieran Trippier. But actually, what you want as a football fan is to go and watch some goals and cheer a win and go, we won. And they're like, great, Cambridge, home, brilliant. This has got 4-0 written all over it. So they go with their flags, fill the stadium as they always do, and then get let down again. I mean, we have to say Mitov, in the Cambridge goal, pulled off some absolutely unbelievable saves. I was slightly annoyed for him. I know I have my goalkeeping union bias. The Ironside, the striker who scored, gets all the praise. You know, number nine, he used to love Alan Shearer. Like, get over it, mate. This goalkeeper saved about three unbelievable dead cert goals. And everyone's like, oh, it's great. You scored a tap-in, mate. But
even the people who admired his goalkeeping skill were still slightly distracted by his name, thinking it shouldn't be called Dimitar Berbatov.
Yeah,
that's what he should be called, isn't it?
but there is a point as well.
Why, this is just incredibly negative.
No, it's
it?
Not negative. It's not. Well, it's negative towards Newcastle, as it should be. But Cambridge, the other thing that slightly makes you feel towards Alisson's point that's not a proper giant killing is that it wasn't kind of backed to the wall. Yes, Mitov made a few saves, but the goal, when you look at it, I couldn't believe it when I watched. They had about 6-7 players in attack. They had 4 guys along the edge of the Newcastle box. It was amazing. It wasn't one of these, you know, play for corners, as I felt like a lot of the shocks were. You know, Kidderminster, Boreham Wood, they both deserve credit for that as well. Boreham Wood still attacking, 1-0 up against Wimbledon. You'd think, right, get the... But they put a striker on and he scored in the 86th minute. There was a lot of that. And they touched on it on Match of the Day, where you kind of feel, as much as the kind of gulf in class is a big part of it, confidence and what your actual league form is. And that's where maybe we should have seen the Newcastle thing coming. They're completely, completely in bits.
But don't you see why the tactics, the approach has changed, Tom?
Why?
No replay. Got to be one on the day. Absolutely nothing to lose. Throw the kitchen sink at it. You know, you're not playing for a draw anymore. There's absolutely no point. It's either extra time and pens, or you can win it in 90. So
that's true.
That change, clearly brilliant and should last forever.
Well, not. I still have my slight doubts about that because of the money-making point that I made on Thursday for the lower league clubs when they get a replay. But yeah, it may be made for more exciting kind of gung-ho action with some of these teams, as I say, going for it. I mean, Kidderminster, they kept going, didn't they? That's probably, as you say, where the goal comes from. The winning goal, thinking, oh, don't really fancy penalties here. Let's get it won now.
The teams towards the bottom of the Premier League, okay, Norwich went through, Burnley out against Huddersfield, Newcastle out too, Watford out as well. So... is that positive for those teams, even Newcastle United?
I think it might be in the long run. I think it's obviously hugely embarrassing. And for all those fans, they'll have been head in hands again going, when is this going to turn? And I think for Eddie Howe, it is a problem as well, because he'll have been wanting Murphy, Saint-Maximin, some of these players to get a goal, bit of confidence, win 4-1, feel like the big dogs again. But that's the low point, isn't it? But I think in the long run, with, you know, COVID postponement still being an issue, games maybe piling up, not having a cup game is not necessarily
No, because if you listen to who won Eloquent Manager of the Weekend Award? That was Steve Cooper, wasn't it? Definitely. And he said, Nottingham Forest manager I'm talking about, he said, because they are in a, they also have distractions. I mean, they could get to the playoffs quite feasibly, actually. That is a got to be a priority. Nottingham Forest back in the Premier League. And he was asked, is there a slight distraction with the FA Cup run? You got your priorities. And he said, no, what I want is a team that knows how to win and likes the feeling of winning. And if you win, you carry on winning. And he said it more eloquently than I am. But he said it like he really meant it. Like, you do not treat a competition like this as a potential distraction and draw positives from defeat. You don't. You get a team together who like winning, enjoy that feeling of winning. So I completely disagree that in the long run, it's going to be good for teams like Watford and Burnley and Newcastle. Because imagine if Newcastle had won that game, which they should have won. We've already gone through how slightly ludicrous the whole setup was, but they would have celebrated winning and they would have enjoyed winning, and the ego and the self-esteem of the players involved would have got such a huge boost, and the narrative would have been, oh, look how they're boosted by the arrival of Trippier, and what's going to happen when they sign more players. It's a hugely negative thing to lose in the FA Cup. And it really, because there's no replays, you can't even claim it's going to drain your resources or your time or energy at all.
Guess who's winning the FA Cup next year?
Next year, not this year.
Yeah, next year.
My God, these hobnobs must be good if you can tell.
Newcastle United, managed by Roberto Mancini. You heard it here first.
From the Championship or the Premier League?
Premier League. They're going to stay up. Believe me. The thing about it is, look, Trippier was the first of, I think, this month, 5 or 6 pretty good signings, if the rumours are to be believed, then they're not going to get relegated.
I mean, as Alisson said, Trippier is actually a very impressive signing. And I think if it follows that pattern of experienced, top quality, even international players, then yes, they're going to have a chance. But I was of the opinion they were going to go out and spend 40 million on some unheard of bloke from Ligue 1.
Joel Linton, for example.
Oh, well, yeah.
Those days are over.
Well, you never know. But I mean, you still look at that team. You look at that team lined up, as I say, when I was making my joke about shirt swapping. And you still, even if you plonk Kieran Trippier in at right back, there's a lot of work still to be done.
I think, honestly, I'm not going to take full responsibility. By the way, I'm talking about Steve Cooper at Nottingham Forest now. We'll talk about it a little bit later on anyway, about the game itself. But I did see him before and I said, Morecambe have just scored against Spurs. Shrewsbury have scored against Liverpool. It's on today for you, Steve. And he said, oh, is it really? And I said, yes, it is. And I think I gave him the confidence to go into that changing room and tell those players, today is your day. That's all I'm saying.
Did you give him a hobnob as well?
I didn't. But a minute later, I saw none other than Idris Elba at the City Ground.
Cool.
And that was, and I said hello to him and he said hi back. Yeah, exactly. So, cool. You know, but the last place in the world you thought you're going to see a Hollywood movie star is the City Ground on an FA Cup third round day. So that was that's what the FA Cup's all about as well, frankly speaking. Am I wrong? Anyway, listen, there's more to talk about in terms of the FA Cup. Kidderminster Harriers at the Aggie, as they call it. The atmosphere on fire, Tom, for a win over Reading. They go marching on.
Yeah, superb performance as well. I mean, this is kind of come back to that point about the confidence. They're doing well in National League North, and Reading, that's a classic case of surely, Alisson, Reading, that's got to be good out the FA Cup, surely. That still doesn't buy into this. They can, nothing good can come from dropping out of the Championship when they're battling and scrapping away. So, look, I think this is another example as well of something we talked about a while ago, when the kind of quality that is in the National League, both in the National League top division, if you like, and in the North and South, there's some really good players down there.
Now I have to come in here because I had a chat while I was at the City Ground
with Idris Elba
with an ex Premier League player, and we were discussing some of the clubs in the National League, and in particular some of the spending there. And a lot of the journalists were in agreement that the top half of the National League is probably better than the bottom half of League Two. And that is because of the spending that is currently going on. Now, some of that spending, listening to some of those players who are in the know, it's very scary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very scary in terms of player salaries. Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. And
so we're all here saying, you know, there's some very good teams in the
National
League.
There are some very good teams. But
and what are we going to say if they go bust?
But that, well, we'll say that if there should be more regulation, as we have said for a long time. But that doesn't mean you can take away anything from the players actually on the day, as we say, and for that great atmosphere that Kidderminster fans provided. I think, and it's but it's not specifically pointed at Kidderminster.
No, it isn't,
the money
because they're not one of those teams.
The spending is rife in the National League pyramid. And look, it will become a problem further down the line. We've talked about it at different stages. The spending in the Championship is not what it used to be. The spending in League One is absolutely mad this season, with clubs desperate to get into the Championship. But it's about what you set as the goal above that. And so the goal for these teams in the National League to reach the Football League, the promised land, when, as you say, Hugh, you quite rightly identify that a lot of those teams, if they get into League Two, they're going to be punching for the playoffs, as we've seen in recent seasons. So they know the prize to get out of that very, very tough league, scrapping away for two promotion places. If they get up there, then they can reach League One, and who knows where they go from there. So it's all about the prize on offer. Same for the clubs in League One. Get to the Championship. Got big away days. You know, they'll be playing Newcastle next season. It'll be fantastic. So you have to factor that in as well. That's the spending comes because the prize that you're offering them, the carrot that you're dangling in front of them, is so tempting.
But does that mean we have fewer and fewer bricklayers and butchers and bakers and candlestick makers playing in the Cup, which is very, very disappointing?
The Kidderminster team is, I think, completely professional, I think,
for
a National League North side. And they were talking about, I think it was on the Match of the Day highlights, where they said they've had so many games postponed that actually, I'm not, Kidderminster fans, don't write in. I'm not saying you got lucky and that you've been had loads of time to prep for this game, but it does become a part of it that you've got a team that you can train, keep fresh. This busy period, they've had a lot of postponements and games moved. So they came into this game probably in good fettle.
I think it was a great atmosphere, and I think that's going to help them in the next round as well. But I have to say, I was happy with the third round draw. Tom Clark, you weren't. You mentioned it a little bit earlier on.
Yep.
The fourth round names are out of the hat. And I think this has been another superb draw.
It
has been another superb draw. Hartlepool go to Crystal Palace, so they've got a trip to a Premier League side. Boreham Wood go to Bournemouth, away from home, but also a big enough club, I think, to think that they've got a decent draw, but also a side they can beat. Cambridge host Luton Town of the Championship. They could go through again. Plymouth go to Chelsea, so there is at least one lower league team with a money-spinning tie. And Kidderminster at the Agborough hosting West Ham United, doing well in the Premier League, of course. What else do you want? All the other big clubs in the top of the Premier League have been kept apart as well. I mean, this is the ideal draw.
I'll give you Kidderminster, West Ham. That's great value. I'll give you that. I'm not going to argue with that. Hartlepool away at Crystal Palace. I don't know. As a fan of the lower league, again, right, this is me alienating Crystal Palace fans. If I got away at Crystal Palace, I wouldn't be like, yeah, get in. Hartlepool have absolutely battled their way to this level of the draw. But my problem comes, as so often in the FA Cup round, Manchester United, Tottenham, Liverpool, Manchester City, home to Fulham, Cardiff. If Manchester United get past Aston Villa, of course, Middlesbrough and Brighton. Bore off. I think if that happens, if any of those ties come out, those big six clubs, traditional clubs, go back into a little mini pot where they play each other. Because they either get a tie, like Chelsea Plymouth, where, you know, that's great, as it was for Chesterfield. They got their goal at Stamford Bridge. Wonderful fun. They'll have got some good shirt swaps. Lukaku, Ziyech, all the lads. They'll have been brilliant. That'll have been superb. They'll be straight on eBay.
They lost 5-1, though.
Yeah, but it's different. That's completely different. You've gone up against the behemoths. You've gone up against the European champions. You've scored a goal. You sort of seen the fans. They were going,
scored a goal.
They were going absolutely mental, though. That would have been great fun. You've gone all the way to Chelsea. Yeah, fine. 5-0. This is a bit crap. Yeah, get in. We've scored. Have that. You're rubbish. You're rubbish. But so Plymouth, Great, that's fantastic. But those teams stay in the draw, and then if they don't get Kidderminster, they go back in the pot. If they get, I mean, that's just so boring, isn't it? Man City at home to Fulham. Get in the bin. That is rubbish. That is rubbish, isn't it?
And we've also seen it a lot.
We've seen it a lot as well. Like Liverpool, this, I'm not having a go at your team, Alison, but Cardiff, like Championship side, been in the Premier League fairly recently.
Struggling.
Home to, I mean, yeah, but come on. That is boring as well. Tottenham, Brighton. I mean, come on. I mean, hopefully Brighton win, because we need teams like Brighton to stay in the FA Cup so that last season with Leicester, we have a team that we can all get behind.
The reason that I like this draw is for that reason. There will be, I think, Championship sides that go far in the FA Cup this season, one that will definitely surprise us, and possibly one of those really lower league sides gets through. So look, Cambridge at home to Luton. They could do it. They could go to the next round. Who they draw, I don't know, but it's certainly possible. And I think it's nice. There's a nice spread of fixtures here that sets us up.
Nice.
Excellent. No, spread of fixtures
my primary school teacher said the worst word in the English language is nice, Hugh Wozencroft. And you've just used it about this FA Cup draw, which proves how rubbish it is.
It's brilliant. And I'll tell you why. It leaves us with a stellar finish to this competition, because we either get the massive games where the big teams meet right in the closing stages, or we get a cup run that the whole country can get behind. Kidderminster into a quarterfinal, a semi-final, maybe something like Chesterfield back in 97. That's what you want. That's what you want. That's what the FA Cup's all about. I would love to see even a lower league side, a League One team maybe getting through to a final. Amazing.
If Boreham would progress, I think we need to know why Boreham Wood, the football club, is separated into two words. And Boreham Wood, where they play, is one word.
Well, you've just talked yourself into your feature for the next round, Alison.
I suspect it's not going to be a very fascinating answer. But isn't it spooky?
That is spooky. But, I mean, yeah. Well, Times readers, get your subscription now for... 2 weeks' time, Alison Rudd explains Boreham Wood or Boreham Wood.
Absolutely no idea what it is. I have no idea whether it's... Yeah, it might be something to do with the TV film studios or something like that.
Let's not worry about it. Alison's going to find out. But just to be the grumpy man of 2022, which I've adopted and I'm going to continue.
Yeah.
But you can just see it, can't you? Man City, the next round, they'll get Huddersfield or Barnsley, Peterborough, QPR. Liverpool will go through.
Are you saying it's fixed?
No, I'm not saying it's fixed. I'm just saying it's boring. And I think... we need to really do something to like try and help grumpy buggers like me. And I just get wound up when top six Premier League teams get home ties against people like Cardiff.
So you just think there should be different pools in the FA Cup?
There could be some way
where they don't join together. You know, we have non-league teams in one playing one side of the competition.
And they get a chance.
Top two.
They get a chance to get a big tie, and then hopefully they do, like Plymouth, you know, going away to Chelsea. That'll be a brilliant, brilliant tie. They'll give them a good game. Plymouth, not a bad side. Or these Premier League sides, if they don't get a tie that's going to benefit the opposition and is going to be great fun and is going to give Shrewsbury the chance to score at Anfield, it's going to give Chesterfield the chance to score and go wild at Stamford Bridge, then those big teams play each other. Because you're talking, Hugh, about the stellar teams going far. Let's remember Leicester winning the FA Cup. You know, Leicester are a big side. We praise them a lot for their ambitions, but they're not the top six side traditionally. So that's why we all got behind them and we all loved them beating Chelsea in the final. And we're all going mad when Yuri Tielemans banged that goal in. So, you know, we need opportunities for teams like Brighton and other teams in the Premier League by getting these big dogs against each other early on. Get them out.
I see. Well, look, I like it. I think we're going to see some special stories in the FA Cup. I think this weekend has set us up for the FA Cup getting more attention this season as well. What? You're smiling, saying it's all a bit too romantic. I can see that. You are disgusted by me, and that's why you're doing that polite English smile thing, Alison. I can see straight through it. What's wrong?
No, there's nothing wrong. But I think this happens in every round of every cup competition. There'll be somebody like you, Hugh, claiming that it's going to be the best ever. You can't even tell from the draw what's going to happen.
Just trying to hype it up. I'm the hype man.
I think the third round was enormous fun, and it was much better than Tom Clark predicted.
Absolutely.
But there's every chance the next round will fall completely flat as a pancake.
Hold up.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Nottingham Forest, let's talk about them next. They are through to that fourth round with a win over Arsenal. And you almost feel now you've seen the result. It was entirely predictable. It's a second third round defeat, though, for the North London side in the last 26 years. The first time in that 26 years they were beaten in the third round was also against Forest at the City Ground back in 2018. That night they were stunned 4-2. This weekend, I think they sleptwalked through the match, to be perfectly honest. They didn't create a chance of note, Arsenal. And you had the feeling it was the same weak underbelly of the Arsenal squad that we've seen in previous years. What did you think of it, Tom?
I think you could be right. I'm going to have to briefly latch on to your half stat about the last time they lost was to Nottingham Forest, to briefly mention Bill Edgar in the Times today. Before this season, Arsenal's only FA Cup third round elimination in the past 25 years. And their only exit in any round at a lower division ground in those 25 years had come at Nottingham Forest City Ground, as you say. Then yesterday, their 25th game of the season brought defeat by a Forest side 25 places below them in the league, watched by 25,000 fans at the City Ground. Brackets, rounded up figure. We'll let you off, Bill. And two of the weekend's biggest FA Cup surprises were created by Wood, Boreham Wood and Forest. Bill Edgar, ladies and gentlemen, absolutely superb stuff. So there's a bit of joy before I come on to Arsenal, because they were very poor. And I was disappointed because I've hyped them up a lot this season. And this was an opportunity, wasn't it, for Arteta? You could have seen a young side, invigorated, attacking, positive, going quite far in this competition. Maybe they've got eyes on the Carabao Cup. Maybe they've got eyes on fourth place. Who knows? But it was really disappointing. And actually, again, I found myself thinking, why didn't I back Forest to beat them beforehand?
Same.
You're kind of thinking, we went through all those ties, didn't we, on Thursday's show? And I don't think we mentioned it. And I was thinking, that was really stupid of us. We should have definitely given Forest a shout out, because, you know, Forest under Steve Cooper drastically improved this season. They've got a lot of talented young players. Brennan Johnson, former Lincoln City legend, obviously coming to a Premier League side near you soon. And, you know, they look pretty comfortable against Arsenal, as you say, Hugh. There wasn't, like, again, it was this thing of the supposed underdog looking pretty calm, composed, and not carefree in attack, but confident in attack. There wasn't, like, parking the bus. There was none of that. And they deserved to win.
There was a really, for once, I often find the analysis on the Match of the Day programmes a bit basic. But
I knew you'd say that. I was waiting for that.
It was good. It was good.
You could have said it.
No, not at all. But they don't really often try to, I don't think. But it was. Oh dear, that sounded worse. But I thought the picking through Forest's win was really interesting. They pointed out that Steve Cooper told his team to allow Arsenal to have possession and to keep trying to play balls from the back, and then they were ready to pounce on those passes. So they were happy to give Arsenal possession, but pounce, win the ball back quickly. And they showed a few examples, and it did seem slightly like they had sort of a sixth sense or something. They seemed to know where the passes were going, and they pounced on them. And then they had proof in their graphic that was what was going on. But the weird part, which they didn't go on to talk about, was if that's clearly the plan, and you can see, or the manager on the touchline, you can see, they're letting us have the ball at the back. That they're going for midfield possession, being tenacious in that area of the pitch. Why didn't Arsenal change it? They didn't change it. It kept happening. And everyone's been talking about what things is Arteta upset about. And he said, he doesn't sort of criticise his players' attitude. The performance wasn't there. Actually, I'd say this is a good instance of it being the manager's fault. They've not reacted quickly enough to what is in front of them in the stadium and just kept plugging away with this sort of belief, well, we're better than them, surely we'll get a goal. There was a lack of flexibility and oomph from the coaching staff, not just a lack of it from the players out there. I don't know. Do you think that's right?
I think it might be a little bit to defend Manager of the Year, Mikel Arteta. Look, we're in the age of doubling down, okay? I'm going to stick with it, even if he gets knocked out of the FA Cup. I think there's an element of, he's only just worked out his plan A, and so he's not quite got round to working out a plan B yet with these young players. And there's also an element of, Arsenal have maybe been a bit used to, even against the mid-table Premier League sides, of being a little bit underappreciated, if you like. And their rise up the table has been a bit unexpected. And so they've finally come into this game where they're the team expected to win. They're the big dogs. And you then, as you say, Forest go, go on then, lads. Let's see what you can do. And there's none of that kind of aggressive pressing that we've seen and praised so much from Martinelli, Odegaard, Saka. Because Forest are just going, oh, okay, well, what are you going to do now then, lads?
But that's when a good manager comes into their own.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
And next time, I'm backing Manager of the Year, Mikel Arteta, to have a plan and have an answer, because the best managers learn from their mistakes.
Well, I went to the game and it was an odd one from Arsenal. I think the first thing to say about why they didn't change it is the bench was not strong. Right. Alex Lacazette was the strongest player on the bench. He came on in the second half.
You don't need a player from the bench to change it. You change your tactics.
Well, and this is the thing that I was going to talk about next. I think he did try and change the tactics. We all saw Nuno Tavares get hooked after 33 minutes, and he got all these headlines about not playing very well, pulling his gloves off and throwing them on the ground in disgust, walking past his manager who gave him an icy glare, and he didn't even look back at him, and he was very annoyed. But actually, I did think that was a tactical change being at the game, because Charlie Patino had started in sort of holding midfield alongside Lokonga for Arsenal, very young player. I think it's only his second appearance for Arsenal. He did score in his first one in the EFL Cup, and he's got, you know, a huge future ahead of him, and he's very highly rated. But Kieran Tierney came on at left back for Tavares and started playing a little bit like João Cancelo at Manchester City, in that he kept pushing into central midfield. He also kept making these sort of darting runs into like the number 10 spot and even higher up the pitch. And then at that point in time, when he went forward, Arsenal would cover the back in a 3 instead of a 4. And it seemed to be a tactical change that was designed to help Charlie Patino, who could not get on the ball at all. And he obviously felt that Tierney could do that role a lot better than Tavares could, who's your sort of archetypal left-back, powerful left-back, good left foot, wants to get forward, but not really a player that's going to go into the midfield and make tough tackles, etc. And maybe he thought Tierney, with a little bit more experience as well, could do that role. And he did have an effect, because he also freed Martinelli up, because when Tierney pushed forward, the right back, Spence for Forest, who had a great game, did finally have something to think about, because it was either Martinelli or Tierney doubling up on him. And so it did feel at the time like this could be something that changes the game in Arsenal's favour. But there were two things for me on that. I think it was 33 minutes into the game and it was maybe too early. You know, give them a chance to grow into the game. I actually think that affected the confidence of the team, because it sent the signal that clearly something's urgently wrong here. You know, like, it's 0-0 and it's 33 minutes gone, but my word, what is happening? And I didn't think it was that bad. Especially, you know, you've got young players without experience. Let them grow into the game. You've given them a tactical change 33 minutes into the match. But also, Arteta's general demeanour on the touchline was just so frantic. And it was just like he was having, you know, an anxiety attack. It was genuinely, you know, all the Arsenal fans, I think, were just like, calm down. It's 0-0. against Nottingham Forest at the City Ground. We've got a lot of young players. What they need you to do is send across the message of calmness. Keep playing your way. Stick to your talents. They will come through. And I think even the more experienced players were almost put off by, you know, the Saka up front. And Nketiah did absolutely nothing in the game. But there was no real encouragement from Mikel Arteta. No real signs to say to Eddie Nketiah, this is how you're going to play better. It was all just sort of an irritation of, you should have done this, you should have done that. And Arteta was just, you know, he seemed annoyed with them. And it really, I think, affected their performance as well. And I like Mikel Arteta, but that wasn't the one for me.
Yeah. Did you, this kind of taps into a lot of the things we've discussed so far in terms of the FA Cup and what's a shock and what's not a shock. Watching the game live, did they look like they could be two teams in the Premier League together? Did Forest look like
two teams in the Championship? Probably.
Ooh, burn. No, but I mean that genuinely. Like, I'm trying to assess this kind of level of shock, no shock, and we're picking apart Arsenal.
No, but
and,
the thing is, there was a safeness, and this is why I say maybe two teams in the Championship. There was a safeness to how Nottingham Forest played, you know, and you can imagine that you're going to do that safety first approach at times with your possession and clearances, because you're playing a team who are in the league above you, who have lots of talented players. So you're not going to make any mistakes in the wrong area. The thing about it was Arsenal played very safe as well. There were no risks. There was no running in behind. There was no real jeopardy to their play. And that's why you say it felt like a Championship team, because it also felt like a safety first approach. Let me give the ball to the player 5 yards away from me instead of hitting a raking cross yard pass that might get us in behind and might give them something to think about. And again, maybe that's just the inexperience. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's surely time we ask the other man who's with us today, who was in the ground, who happens to be a Nottingham Forest fan, our producer John. This is your time to gloat. Were you buzzing?
I've waited 18 months for this. I was going to say, manager of the year, Steve Cooper, did very well. I would like to shout out Jack Colback, who is a player that Forest fans were over the moon with when he first came to the club. And then he sort of, you know, fell out of favour, especially under Chris Hughton, because he was one of the players that was seen to be very negative, always passing backwards, but never pass forwards, along with Ryan Yates, who now, I mean, you know, is probably one of the first names on the team sheet under Steve Cooper. But he kept Saka very quiet yesterday, and it was that thing where he sort of made him cut inside on his left foot, which I don't think you want Saka to do. But then he knew that the people, I mean, Steve Cook obviously sort of made his debut after his move from Bournemouth, he had that sort of confidence that he would be there ready to cut out the pass, and he pretty much did every time. I was in the opposite side to Hugh, so I got a completely different perspective on the substitution. I didn't even realise he took his gloves off and threw them on the floor. That's actually news to me, having been so far away. But yeah, I was pretty happy. And when you say it's like two Championship sides, I literally said to my friend, it's the second half now. Arsenal will come out and carve us apart like Premier League teams do when they play lower league opposition. And Arsenal basically didn't come out in the second half at all. Forest just started attacking, played a little bit more risky football, like you say, and eventually it paid off.
It's an interesting one, that, because I went to Millwall against Crystal Palace at the Den on Saturday as well. And obviously Palace scored their equaliser about a minute into the second half. And there was a clear gear change. Whatever was said by Patrick Vieira at half time, it had this huge effect on Palace, and it was exactly the same team that had started out in the second half. They were just transformed. You know, there was more aggression. There was more forward running. There was more forward passing. Players were going at Michael Olyse in particular, going at their opposite number. There was no safety at all. And like I say, it felt very, very safe from Arsenal. And I don't know why.
I think we need a Netflix series on...
We've got Arsenal coming. Don't worry about that.
On how... I want to know how the Premier League team prepares differently for a lower division team in the Cup. Because we can assume they don't take it as seriously. But I mean, effectively, they should do more analysis, more research, and prepare the players better, because they're unfamiliar with them.
Yeah, they'd have.
And
no
this
idea.
Explains a lot of the initial tentativeness, and then often a second half performance that's, you know, they've acclimatized, if you like, which you shouldn't really have to do, maybe a tiny bit, but it's a throwaway comment, isn't it? Oh, you didn't take the opposition seriously enough. But I'd like to know
if they really did.
Yeah.
I don't think they, I don't think managers go, ah, whatever, go out. But I think, I suspect they don't realise they should do more prep, not less.
Well, after the Boreham Wood feature, that's your second assignment for the next round of the FA Cup, Alison. But very quickly, I'd like to John to tell us all how excited he was by Nottingham Forest beating Arsenal and how excited he is about facing Leicester in the next round. Because we're all sat here going, does the FA Cup matter? Championship team beats a Premier League team. I mean, to me, I'm looking at the draw and going, Nottingham Forest, massive club, huge history. That would have been a great tie for Cambridge instead of them getting Luton. But does it work still the same way, John?
I feel that Leicester City wish they were rivals with Nottingham Forest. I think it's a, you know, Nottingham Forest and Derby County hate each other. Leicester City are just around. I went to university in Leicester from 2009 to 2012. And that was the last time that Nottingham Forest and Leicester were even. And obviously Leicester have been on a, you know, a fantastic run ever since. So the thought of now playing them where, you know, if we were still under Chris Hughton, I wouldn't be very excited, put it that way. But now Steve Cooper's come in and, you know, Forest lost their last two games before this, but they had 23 shots on target. And on target, 23 shots, if they weren't all on target, in the previous game. And I was happy that, you know, even though they lost, it was positive. I now face the prospect of watching Forest against Leicester for the first time in a decade where Forest could beat Leicester. And that's exciting. I also wonder whether our Forest, you know, there's two matches where the teams knew who they'd play in the fourth round. And that was Forest Arsenal and Manchester United versus Aston Villa tonight. I think, you know, finding out, I mean, there was an audible cheer in the extra long queue outside the City Ground because they've just introduced digital ticketing for the first time and decided to implement it just for this FA Cup third round tie, which was hilarious as we missed the start of the game. And there was a cheer that sort of rippled around the fan zone, as they call it, at the City Ground, which is basically a few trestle tables in the car park. And yeah, I think everyone's excited. I think everyone's excited to take on Leicester while Leicester are having a bit of a blip whilst Forest are on the up.
Maybe Forest are going to be your team, Hugh. Maybe this is it. Maybe.
I would like to say that Hugh's a good luck charm, but, you know, obviously, you know, Forest did beat Arsenal before 4-2 and Hugh was nowhere to be seen.
That is true. It was a weird FA Cup upset in that it didn't seem to have all of those other elements that the upsets this weekend had. It was a rather routine victory for Nottingham Forest, I felt. The atmosphere was good, but it wasn't something that I think, you know, I was at the Den, like I say, on Saturday, and it was unbelievable, the atmosphere. And it really had that sort of fiery temper to the game. And there wasn't any of that in the game between Nottingham Forest and Arsenal. Nottingham Forest were just the better team.
There were two things in that. Once Forest went ahead, normally Forest are great at losing a lead. I felt fairly confident that, you know, Arsenal had shown nothing in the game that made me worry that they would get back into the game. And also, you know, there's a reason that I wasn't that worried. It's because, you know, teams like Huddersfield looked a way more threatening in front of goal than Arsenal. Yeah. And that's probably not a good compliment for Arsenal, is it?
I think we're dancing around a great topic here. Build your cup upset. Take a team from one league and a team from a higher league. And what's your perfect combination? And don't just say, like, National League North beat Liverpool. I mean, like, something that could feasibly happen.
You're saying it couldn't feasibly happen?
Oh, come on, man. You know what I'm getting at.
It
could, but it's highly unlikely. I think we're talking about some of these ties when we're saying about Cambridge beating Newcastle and going suddenly, oh, that's not that surprising. And then Forest beating Arsenal.
Sunderland beating Newcastle next year when Sunderland are still in League One and Newcastle have Mbappe up front might be quite nice.
That'd be quite good. To me, it has to have non-league in it. Like, non-league team, even a non-league team beats a championship team, that's great fun.
You want it to be a giant killing. Like, if you're going to choose your ideal cup, come on, you want it to be
I'm more thinking
Man City losing 5-0.
In the context of that, yeah, Kidderminster, Reading, Boreham Wood, Wimbledon, Cambridge, Newcastle, Arsenal, Nottingham Forest. What's your best upset there?
I don't know. Alison?
Well, it's quite clear from what we've already said, the unifying fixture was Newcastle losing.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. I'm going to give it to Kidderminster.
Okay.
Go on, the boys.
But Tom, you're going to get sued by the Build-A-Bear Corporation because you've just stolen that concept where you go into a shop and you build your own teddy bear.
Maybe that's what I want.
Maybe have they paid for that? Have they paid for that plug? Can I just say that was?
We've given Hobnobs about four plugs, so we might as well throw in a few more.
I never said they were good. Okay, I never said they were good. Listen, I think that was part, John, thank you very much, of a fantastic FA Cup weekend. there were a couple of scares. Shrewsbury going ahead at Anfield. Great moment for them, but they ended up losing 4-1. Morecambe went ahead at Tottenham Hotspur. Let's talk about that because Alison Rudd, you were there. They needed the reinforcements off the bench, Antonio Conte's side, to get past Morecambe, fighting for relegation in League One. Harry Kane and Lucas Moura and others coming off the bench. And the starting 11 featured Dele Alli, Tanguy Ndombele, Harry Winks, Brian Hill, Giovanni Lo Celso as well. How bad? I was going to say how good are the Tottenham squad players. How bad are they?
They're not very good at all. There were loud boos at half time, and I made the point I didn't feel it was booing because of the scoreline. It was because Tottenham were just no energy, quite a lot of apathy, disjointed, peculiar performance in the first half. I was surprised there weren't wholesale changes made at half time. Which does imply that Antonio Conte wanted them to prove a point, was reminding them, look, a lot of you are, I'm sure he doesn't use the phrase fringe, no player's told they're a fringe player. But I mean, he's basically saying, come on, prove to me that I should be picking you more often. Please, you know, you've cost the club a lot of money. Come on, show me. And they did perk up a little bit. It's quite easy to say, oh, he brought the big guns off the bench, and that clearly they made a difference. It was more that they took players off that weren't making a difference, to be honest. But what happened in this game really was that a team that were 57 places below them, this happens a lot. The lower division teams, they get tired. They're not as fit as Premier League players, and they don't have the resources to make intelligent substitutions. They played absolutely brilliantly, did Morecambe. Some really eye-catching performances, very solid, real gutsy defending. It was enjoyable to watch that they weren't... it's a marvellous stadium. They weren't overawed at all. Really good defending. But the goals at the end came because of mistakes by Morecambe players who were just exhausted. Players who'd shone suddenly were like, I don't know how to move one foot in front of the other. I'm really tired now. And the subs took advantage and scored. So I wouldn't even go down the route of saying this clearly proves who Conte's A and B team are. It just proves that he doesn't have a B team. And the most fascinating club this January transfer window will be Spurs and how many they can offload. I think if Conte had his will, he'd offload a load. But I don't, you know, as we know, Spurs are cautious about sales and they're cautious about purchases. It will be fascinating. The psychology of players knowing that they've been picked for a reason, and the reason isn't, we think you're all going to gel really well together, guys. I think I've watched a lot of Morecambe and I think you are going to win 8-0 because you're fantastic. They're being picked because they're being told, come on, show me something that you've not shown me. And that's a weird thing to do when you go out on a football pitch. Be someone you're not. Be someone you've not been. And in the case of Dele Alli, who's yet again, I mean, he seems always linked with a move away from the club. His way of proving he was committed was to dive for a penalty. And it was a ridiculous, silly dive.
It's worked before.
I know, but it was just like, is that all you've got to offer, really, that you can dive? Because... really, it's not done when you're playing a lower division team in the FA Cup that the Premier League player dives. That's wrong, isn't it?
Bad form, isn't it?
Bad form.
Very bad form. That's every lower league fan's nightmare, isn't it? Being done by a dive by a Premier League player in the FA Cup. I mean, very briefly on Dele Alli, Hugh, you asked us before, kind of around the Christmas period, what was the one move we wanted to see in the January transfer window? And I think I said Phil Jones and Jesse Lingard, but I've changed my mind. Dele Alli, please let's get him somewhere, anywhere. I'm sick of talking about him. He's not going to get in the Tottenham team. He needs to go somewhere else. Talented player, please. Someone buy him, loan him, anyone.
Well, this is the thing. That Alison was talking about Antonio Conte offloading players, and you can't see a resale value in most of them. Like, you genuinely cannot.
No.
Because who wants to buy Giovanni Lo Celso for what? I mean, he costs 50 million quid, but even 25?
Yeah. Well, that's the poor recruitment Alison's highlighting. And this, I remember us being in this studio arguing about the impact that Conte was going to have and whether we thought it was a great move for Tottenham that they should get excited. And I think, Hugh, you and I said they're going to have to spend money. And you almost felt like this was, it probably wasn't Jose Mourinho-esque to that extent, but they're kind of, I told you so. I told you they were crap after after Harry Kane and Son.
He's had about four of those already since he's become Tottenham manager.
But there's no bad thing, you know, there's no bad thing to help his argument to go behind to Morecambe and be hanging on and have to throw Kane and Moore on that to then support his argument. But this is a crunch time for Tottenham, isn't it? Because as well as offloading some of those players, they've got to sign some as well. Because, you know, as we saw with the semi-final against Chelsea, they need reinforcements. And otherwise, they're going to be scrapping around for a Europa League place and falling short in the cups.
Ali isn't the only one, by the way. I know I mentioned Giovanni Lo Celso, resale value, and Ali, of course, you did. Tanguy and Ndombele, Harry Winks. Brian Hill, I think, has a future, talented player, but no real effect at the moment. Ndombele was basically booed off. I think it was the Tottenham fans trying to encourage him to get off the pitch faster, given they were losing 1-0 at home to Morecambe. But it did feel like one of those moments that you thought, yeah, his future is not as a Tottenham Hotspur player.
Yeah, no, really strange. And Conte afterwards determinedly avoided questions about Ndombele in the way that they were phrased, as, you know, was he saying goodbye to the club? Is that effectively the last game he plays for Spurs? How do you feel, Antonio, about a player going off down the tunnel and not watching the game, the rest of the game with his teammates? And Conte chose to answer it in terms of, oh, he'll be okay. When I was a player, I got booed sometimes. These things happen. So he wasn't going there, but it's a bit weird. It feels like the fans were letting the new manager know, this is a player we don't mind you getting rid of, even though he's our club record signing. And I don't know if it's entirely fair. I mean, it is peculiar that he took his time walking off the pitch. That was odd.
You mentioned tired Morecambe players. I imagine Tanguy and Ndombele was even more tired, don't you?
Well, no, but you skip off the pitch if you're losing, don't you, to make way for...
If you can.
I don't know. It was a bit like end of tether, felt like.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I don't really approve of fans booing their own players. But it's kind of weird they've got off. No one's really castigating the fans for doing it. It's like he's seen as a divisive figure. And it did feel like...
Is he scapegoated?
I didn't think it... I mean, I did chat to my colleagues who were there. Did he really have such a bad game? No, he didn't. He really didn't. He wasn't the worst player. It's about that intangible of how you know, does he feel for the club? Does he love the club? Is he giving his all for the club? It just seems, well, if you've decided as a fan he isn't, then you feel entitled to boo him off the pitch.
There was a period, wasn't there, last season when he was seen as the brilliant kind of playmaker in midfield for a very, very brief time.
Mm.
And I think that's slightly symbolic of all these Tottenham signings that we're talking about. And some of these players that you've mentioned, Hugh, Dele Alli was burst onto the scene and was absolutely superb. There's no denying that, but then kind of loses his way. There was a period when Harry Winks was the saviour for England's central midfield problems, and now they want to get rid of him. There was even a period where Tottenham fans liked Eric Lamella, like for the kind of get Lamella on, and, you know, being in the office when Tottenham games were on, and there was a few Tottenham supporters, get Lamella on to run, you know, show some energy, kick some people. Same with Lo Celso under Mourinho. There was that kind of energy, pressing, but they all ultimately have like little half roles, half moments in the spotlight, and then never become a proper player with a purpose in this team, with a role. And you just go back to going, well, they've got Son and Kane and a load of other players. And that's where they're at now. That's the squad that Antonio Conte's got. And so they've got to offload. They've got to bring players in.
Honestly, I said it when Antonio Conte came and everyone was saying there's going to be this £150 million war chest. I said double it, 300
yeah,
million.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? I remember.
At this point in time, I think they are going to be able to double it because I think Harry Kane will be allowed to leave. I think if they've got an extra 120 million, maybe 130 million coming in through his sale, plus the 150 million, that's Antonio Conte's money to rebuild the Tottenham squad and whatever else he can get by selling players that he currently has. That's the only way for me. They just don't have and are not going to have a good enough squad without selling Harry.
I don't, at this point, that would be more disastrous than selling him in the summer, I think. Because
oh yeah, maybe not in January, but summer.
Maybe in the summer. Yeah. I think it'll be interesting to see, as Alison said, what happens in this window with Tottenham. And if they get to the end of it and they've maybe offloaded Dele Alli on loan and signed one player, slightly bemused by the idea of signing Adama Traore to be a wing-back when as a wing-back.
Well, I hate the fact that people keep saying it, but he did make Victor Moses a pretty good wing-back when he was at Chelsea and won the league.
He did, but I think Victor Moses could at least cross the ball before he did that. Adama Traore's end product. I mean, I love watching him. He's incredibly exciting. There's very few other players like him in world football when he's running at an opposition defender. But his end product is abysmal. So I don't understand that one either.
Well, I suspect it's all tied in with Antonio Conte's philosophy of you have to struggle. I mean, he likes his players to have pain. So if you're going to train with Traore every day,
that's true.
It's going to really hurt.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the one marking him, boss, but you have to struggle.
Yeah. I think he didn't realise that with Tottenham, he would have to struggle as well, old Antonio. I think he was used to going into these big teams and going, right, lads, you've got to struggle. While he kind of swanned around with his fancy hair. That he got from somewhere, and but no, that's a bit disparaging. But like, it's hard for him, isn't it? Now you know he's got this second leg of the Carabao Cup coming up. Where does Tottenham season go? Is going to be an interesting one. We talked about it with Tom Roddy recently. He backed them to get into the Champions League. I just don't see it.
His demeanour is strange at the moment, Conte.
Why?
I mean, I watched a lot of him when he was here with Chelsea, and he was very. Clearly, it's a different club with different ambitions and more money. But, you know, he was very sparkly-eyed and jolly and witty and good fun. And he's really quite miserable. And his touchline demeanour isn't terribly interesting either.
But what I would say about his current demeanour is he sounds nicer in terms of the message that he's putting out than when he was Chelsea boss. There's all this give players loads of time. You know, it's a long process stuff. You know, don't be too harsh on anyone. We've just got to keep working out on the training field. It'll all come good. It doesn't feel like he's got that aggressive, ruthless streak in him as Spurs manager that we know he's had basically everywhere he's been, you know, ruthlessly wanting to win games. I feel like there is a bit of an acceptance that we aren't that good. So there's no point in me really pressurizing us to be winning every week. I will do that once we've got the players to do that, but currently we don't.
But maybe that comes from, as we said before, with Inter and Chelsea, you know, he was the guy who comes in and immediately wins trophies. So with that comes an intensity of, you've got to do this now. Turn it, you know, turn up the volume right now. And maybe this is long-term Antonio Conte. Maybe he's settling down.
Again, it was a great FA Cup third round. I love the draw for the fourth round. There is a little bit of admin that we need to do when it comes to, I guess, the Premier League. Ralf Hasenhüttl and David Moyes, in their press conferences before this weekend's games, talking about the idea that players who've been bought during the January transfer window shouldn't be allowed to play in the postponed fixtures from before the transfer window opened. So you should have a one squad to play half the matches in the Premier League. The transfer window opens, you have the opportunity to have a different squad for your next 19 games. And I sort of agreed with that, to be perfectly honest. Except we know matches could be postponed for other reasons, other than COVID, of course, and injuries. And if your match had been postponed for snow, for example, in December, and was rearranged for January, I don't think there would be any sort of indication or even appeal for this rule to be changed. But if you're Southampton and you've got to play Newcastle twice now with a new improved side, you can understand the request, can't you, Alison?
I can understand it because it's what you do to try and level a very unlevel playing field. If Ralf Hasenhüttl had been given £3 billion to spend on whoever he wanted to spend it on, he wouldn't be saying it, would he? It's just this fear of, and it's too many, having to, you know, the five subs argument as well. Who does it benefit? It benefits the clubs who have five more brilliant players on the bench than you do. So you're just simply trying to level up. But it doesn't, I don't like the suggestion because, this is the randomness of league football. You could play Newcastle in week one and Newcastle in the second half of the season, and they'll be very different, and it's got nothing to do with who they've bought. It could be because they sacked the manager. You could say, well, I'm not playing you because you weren't manager 4 weeks ago, so I don't want to play you now. It's not fair. There's millions of things that change through a season that make it very unfair that you play a team when they're riding high, everything's going well for them, and someone else, you know, managed to catch them when they had a few injuries, the game wasn't postponed, and I don't know, they were in between managers, or there was a takeover rumour. You can't suddenly just focus on this one inequity. That's the way a season-long, you know, league system works. It's going to mean that you sometimes face somebody when they're doing really well, and they weren't doing really well
before. Hold on, because I agree with you on that. Except the Premier League has clearly, although I must say that this is an opinion because we have no facts, we didn't know who was out with injury, we didn't know exactly who was out with COVID-19. But no one is telling me that the Premier League's rule of having 13 available players and one goalkeeper has been enforced with all these, I think, almost 20 postponements now. Absolutely no way. They've said, we've got plenty of time to play these games. The broadcasters probably want to see the best possible players that they can. They don't want to see a load of kids that they've never heard of. So we're going to move these games further down the line. Because there's no way all of these games would have been postponed if that rule had been strictly enforced. I mean, they've got the whole 25 Premier League player squad to pick from, and they can pick from their under 23s as well. So the idea that all of these games, there were fewer than 14 players, is not true.
It was never a hard and fast rule. And they've said they've always taken the view they will. There is room for manoeuvre in looking at the squad that would be available.
Well, it's
not a hard and fast rule.
No, okay, I understand that, because obviously clubs request the Premier League, say they look at the facts and then they make a decision on whether to postpone or not. I can understand that. But equally, if I'm a team that doesn't feel the rules have been applied fairly, I and there is a rule there, it might not be a hard and fast rule, but there is a suggestion there. This is the number of players you need to have matches take place. The opposition side doesn't say, well, we're not going along with this postponement. They don't have a chance. They can't say that. Southampton could have just said, have they got 14? We're playing tomorrow then. See you there. But the Premier League says, actually, sorry, Southampton, it's postponed because we don't think it's a good enough squad. Well, hold on a minute. What about the fairness of the randomness of league football, including COVID-19 and injuries? So, you say it goes one way, but it could have also gone the other, and in Southampton or any other club's favour.
Yeah, it needs a Netflix series.
You're talking about a level of transparency that unfortunately is probably never going to exist in football, isn't it? In terms of these injuries and things, we get it with international football, don't we? Half of the England squad drops out when they're meant to be playing San Marino with mysterious knocks, and then they're all back for fantasy football selection 2 weeks later and your headache begins again. I think I'm with Alison. You know, you think about Tottenham and Chelsea in the Carabao Cup, that first leg. Tottenham could, they didn't and haven't. They could have spent some money and put a player in for the second leg that turns the whole game around. I think that's just the nature of the game, how it's set up. That's the nature of the transfer windows as they are. Yeah, I see where you're coming from, Hugh, with the idea that you would know specifically that it was all COVID related and the squad had been completely decimated, that you then get those players returned to you at full fitness and full health and you don't get the couple of brand new signings, fine, but that's just not going to happen, I think. So it's COVID is providing new reasons for managers to complain about various different issues and look for different excuses. It's provided Thomas Tuchel with the argument and Jurgen Klopp to talk about five subs again and again, which is their prerogative. And as Alison says, because they would be the teams in the strongest position for that, Ralf Hasenhüttl is maybe thinking, we're going to get screwed over here further down the line. It gives him a chance to get an early excuse in. But I just think, get on with it, lads.
I mean, look, the Premier League also last week, by the way, changed their rule on who is an eligible player to exclude youngsters given a game in the FA Cup third round, which would have been obviously a senior appearance. They have then said, no, actually, if you appear in the FA Cup third round, that doesn't count. And lo and behold, the day after Leicester play with lots of those youngsters in their team, their game is postponed because they haven't got enough players. And clearly they would have had enough players had those youngsters who played in the FA Cup been counted as having a senior appearance. So changing the rules as they like to fit their own agenda. you know.
Well, you know, they don't have the darts to go to now, the Leicester players, when they've got the game off. But there is snooker. There is now snooker to go and watch.
That is true. That is true. Listen, I think, as I say, it's been a very good weekend. I disagree with you guys on the Premier League and whatnot. But look, as long as the games go ahead, and I think that more of them will be going ahead now, that is a good thing. And as long as we have a very positive season with integrity, I will enjoy it. We will be here to discuss it. And that, of course, is a great thing, not just for us, but the nation as a whole. Alison Rudd, Tom Clark, thank you for joining me on the Game Podcast this week. We're going to look at Manchester United's game against Aston Villa and the Carabao Cup semi-finals on Thursday. So make sure you join us. If you haven't already, make sure you're subscribed to The Times and The Sunday Times. If you sign up today, you'll get yourself 1 month free. Just go online. It's thetimes.co.uk/the game. We'll see you very soon. Thanks for listening.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.